It is good to see everyone here this morning. We are going to be studying on the subject of what constitutes fool, characteristic of a fool. And I think the best way to start that out is by turning to Philippians chapter 1 and verse 9 and looking at the opposite of that. Here we will see what are the characteristics of the opposite of a fool. And of course, if we are to give the best synonym for that, or the best antonym for fool, it would be a wise person. And so the Apostle Paul on this occasion says in Philippians chapter 1 and verse 9, "This I pray, that your love may abound still more and more in knowledge and in all discernment, that you may approve the things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offense till the day of Christ, being filled with the fruits of righteousness, which are by Jesus Christ, to the glory and the praise of God." Now, I think a significant part of that text is the phrase, knowledge and all discernment. If you want to define what a wise Christian is, it's a person who has knowledge and who has the ability to discern between good and evil. And we're told if we have our senses exercised, to discern between good and evil, that allows us to live righteously and sanctified before Him. And so that's kind of what we're talking about here. But He also gives a number of various aspects of that idea of knowledge and discernment. The first thing is approving of those things that are excellent. And so we need to have some awareness of what is excellent as it is contrasted to that thing which is poor. That thing that is unworthy. And it reminds me of the text in Romans chapter 1 at the end of that chapter where the apostle refers to individuals that no longer retain God in their knowledge, and as such they were given over to a debased mind, and then lists a great number of things that they did. We are told that those who practice such things, or those who approve of those things that are practiced, are not worthy of the kingdom of heaven. And so there are many individuals in the world today that may not actively engage in certain heinous acts, certain things that are abominations toward God, and yet they are not approving what is excellent. They approve those things that are not as they should be. And I never thought we would get to a nation, not to be political, but never get to a nation that would be so antagonist toward what we might refer to as the rule of law. We understand, always have, the anarchy that exists when laws are not followed and laws are not obeyed. But it seems at this time there is so much that is given to encourage those and to support those and to show sympathy for those who are breaking the law, and breaking the law purposefully, and often breaking the law violently. And yet people are tending to approve those individuals and actually hold against someone who would have the audacity to call these things wrong, and maybe the powers that be who would prosecute these things. And that's the opposite of wisdom. It's foolishness. It causes a degradation of society as an individual who is not approving those righteous things will himself, because of that, be on the road to perdition and ruin as he causes problems in his own life, physically with the application of these principles, and then of course spiritually in regard to his standing before God, because God will not countenance sin that is in our lives. But there is the approval of the things that are excellent. There are those who, because they have knowledge and discernment, they act in sincere or pure ways, and they are without offense. Remember, that's a good description of our Lord Himself. He was one in whom there was no guile, nor was there deceit found in His mouth. He was not guilty of offense. Now, He offended a lot of people, but it wasn't because of anything that He had done amiss. He was a righteous individual, and we should strive to be righteous as well, being filled with the fruits of righteousness. When we talk about wisdom, unfortunately, it is the case that too few in the world, and perhaps we can even say too few among us, are sufficiently wise. And there are some dangers that we want to address today. We could call them characteristics of the fool, but I would ask that you examine yourself very carefully to say, at the very least, if there are any tendencies in this matter. We will talk about extremes, but it can be that individuals will also be guilty, if not of these various things or the extreme aspects of these things, but maybe there are problems that exist in our own lives. And not necessarily the case with the first one, but as we will continue and follow, that may be true. So let's start off with the first obvious one, because of what the text in Psalm 14 tells us. It's the obvious one we would start with. It's a foolish individual who denies God's existence. It's what the psalmist said in Psalm 14 and verse 1. The fool has said in his heart, "There is no God." They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none who does good. We talk with a little bit of humor about individuals who go beyond foolishness. Not only do they think it in their heart, but they're actually willing to say it out loud that there is no God. But the fact is, there are individuals who will look at the world, and because of the way they were raised, because of their unwillingness to consider that the heavens declare the glory of God and the firmament shows His handiwork, and that there is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard, they nevertheless are not willing to listen, not willing to consider those things, and strive to give any possible explanation for the existence of life, for the existence of creation, for the fact that we are here other than the supernatural. It is a tendency that many have in our society today. I was always one who did not struggle in regard to my faith, but struggled with a feeling of maybe insecurity as I, for example, would go into college and I would have my geology teacher. I was studying in the early courses I was taking to possibly being an engineer, and so geology was one of the things that I studied, and physics was another thing that I studied, and in college, and you had these professors, and these professors were either atheist, evolutionist in some way. They might have acknowledged an existence of a God, but they did not attribute to Him creation at all, nor the creation account that we find in the book of Genesis. And I thought, well, how can I withstand such an individual? And how in the world those people who are so smart can deny these things if they're so? That in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. In 6 days He did. On the seventh day He rested. But then I read an article, again while I was very young, where an evolutionist acknowledged the fact that the theory of evolution was just that. It was something that was a theory, and it was unfortunately something that has not yet been. In other words, it may get there in the future, because he was supporting it, but it had not yet been given enough time, or there had not been enough advances and discoveries to really make it a satisfactory explanation for the reason of the existence of the universe and of mankind. So it's just not enough, really. We're looking for more, and we're coming up empty in certain areas. And he said, but I want you to understand something. That evolution is the only workable hypothesis or workable theory that we have with regard to the existence of the world, except for God, and we can't accept that. In other words, he just wasn't even willing to consider it, because it was the supernatural. It was above and beyond the natural. He, as a scientist, he could limit himself only to the natural. And so if indeed God did it, it couldn't be something that he could acknowledge or study, because that's outside the realm of his expertise. He could only come to some physical explanation of why the earth existed. And I thought, well, you know, that's a bias that an awful lot of people truly have. It's not so much that they seek to disprove the creation of the world by a supernatural first cause, a divine intelligence that is described in the Old Testament scriptures as Jehovah God is simply it doesn't fit their framework, and so they out of hand reject it and look for any other explanation. Evolution is not a great explanation, but it's the best we got. And we can't accept the only other one that people posit because we're scientists. And so I felt a little bit better about my faith as time went on, because I understood that just as I have a preconception, my preconception is in the beginning God. And it makes sense to me, and I think there is abundant evidence to establish the truth of that. But I know that as time has gone on, that many have rejected the knowledge of God, despised the knowledge of God, and their point of view is colored in every sense, in every way, by the fact that God cannot be the first cause in their mind, because that's above and beyond the natural. And so you have individuals that think that. Well, consider this in Romans chapter 1. We're told in verse 18 of the text, the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. We see that today, do we not? And there has been that degradation of our society. I used to love a preacher friend of mine when I was a young preacher, because he always came up with the phrase, the muck and mire of sin and degradation. I thought, boy, that played off the tongue. But you do realize that our society is digressing. Our society is going into ruin, to perdition. I don't know how much longer it will last. But the rejection of the Christian principles and the existence of God, the knowledge of His existence, the willingness to heed these things, makes a nation more and more unrighteous. It is because the truth is suppressed. What may be made known of God, we are told by the Apostle Paul, is manifest even in them. God has shown it to them. Since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen, His eternal power and His Godhead, so that they are without excuse. But although they knew God, they didn't glorify Him as God, nor were they thankful, but became futile in their thoughts. And because of this, their foolish hearts were darkened. You see, Paul uses the same phrase there. The fool is set in his heart. The fool is the one who is foolish. His heart has been darkened. His understanding is not what it could be because he denies the existence of God. That's a characteristic of a foolish individual. So what am I saying? Do I have the temerity? Do I have the audacity to say we've got a whole bunch of professors and scientists and extremely leading lights, extremely intelligent people in the mind of many in our society who really are fools and leading our nation into desolation and ruin because of such foolishness? Now let's get to the next point, because that one's one obvious to us who are here. But the second one is perhaps something we should consider. A fool is an individual who doesn't control himself. Well, that can hit closer to home, can losing perhaps our temper, speaking out when we should be silent. Perhaps it may be that there is a lust of the heart, a lust of the eye, a lust of the flesh, those kinds of things that might be difficult for us to control. In fact, in the book of James, there is that reference how the tongue is a raging fire within us. It is a world of iniquity. It is one that cannot be tamed, and it is very difficult for us to control. We're told in Proverbs chapter 19, in verse 1, there will be many verses from Proverbs that we'll have here. But Proverbs 19, it is the fool who is perverse with his lips. So if someone doesn't control what he has to say, that's foolishness. You know, there are times when each of us are beaten down. There are times when we receive from others something that is unkind, untoward, something that is not as it should be, and there is always that desire that we might have initially to respond either in kind or to respond to them with anger because we have been provoked, rancor in our heart, and that's perversity, and that is something that is unwise. We're told you're better if you're poor, but you walk in integrity. then you be perverse in your lips, because that person is a fool. Proverbs 12 and verse 16, we are told that a fool's wrath is known at once, but a prudent man covers shame. So how can you know a person is angry? Because he tells you right away. He gets mad and he speaks up. You know, we have all of those common phrases. The one that's most commonly said is, you know, but if someone speaks and it angers you, just count to 10 before you speak in return. And you know as well as I do, the 10's often not enough. And maybe we need to count a little bit slower, or maybe count to a higher number before we ever speak, because it is a foolish thing to respond when you are angry. But a fool, he just doesn't consider that, and because of that, he often shames himself. We're told in Proverbs chapter 7, the wise man said, "Listen to me, my children. Pay attention to the words of my mouth." And so this is wisdom personified here. Let's listen to wisdom. "Don't let your heart turn aside. Do not stray into her paths," having reference to one who is unrighteous, "because she has cast down many wounded, and all who were slain by her were strong men." And think about that foolishness and an ability to control yourself. There are so many in the world today. In fact, power, I think, has a tendency to that, doesn't it? How many powerful people have you come across who are parts of unseemly activities, whether it be sexual immorality and affairs and promiscuity, or whether it be the abuse of power, and how rich people will end up cheating their taxes or cheating the stock market, or, you know, power and position and honor and all these things that men ascribe to it. And that's what it's saying here. This is the woman, the immoral woman, and she seeks to seduce, and we are told that those who were slain by her, brought down by her, were strong. So strength is not the matter. It is the ability to control yourself that's under consideration in this matter. And so that is a foolish person who doesn't control himself. Temperance, self-control, that is something that we all should keep in mind is important for us as Christians in every manner of our life. The third point, ignoring the danger of sin. Young people, I want you to think about this. It is important to know this with regard to those that you keep company with, your friends. So we got friends at school, don't we? I had them growing up, too. So I want to be with those friends. And then as their friends got a little bit older, then they started doing things that I knew I shouldn't do. And yet I still wanted to be with those friends. I wanted to be accepted by those friends. I wanted to be liked by those friends. And so is there not, when that happens, a temptation that, okay, this is something I know I'm not supposed to do, but I'm going to do it anyway. I know this is going to be disappointing to my parents. I may actually get into trouble for what I'm doing with my parents. Or maybe you have the spiritual maturity to say, I know that God would not approve of this. And yet, that peer pressure, pressure of your friends tell you, come on, do this. Take part in this with us is a very difficult thing to fight against. And so we have a tendency to rationalize. We say, okay, it's not that big a deal. It's not going to hurt me this particular time. If I don't do it often, or I'm not caught, or I don't go too far, I'm going to be okay. But we are told that evil companions corrupt good morals. What that means is, if you have friends who are doing things that are wrong, then you need to get away from those friends. That's something that God expects of you. You find some friends that are going to help you be righteous and live the way you're supposed to live instead of ways in which you ought not. But there are too many who ignore that danger. It doesn't happen just to young people. It happens to all of us, or can happen to all of us. Ignoring the danger of sin, it's not going to get me. I'm going to be okay. I can handle it. Or this is not a big deal, or I'll do it right the next time, but this time I want to do what I want to do. And it happens with all the sins that we do, but we're told to do evil. A foolish person, he considers it sport. Oh, wow. Oh, that brings it home, doesn't it? I want you to think about that. We have, and Josh and I both do this some, and maybe some others do. You got your interest in YouTube and that kind of stuff. Well, ours is golf. Golf is kind of big on YouTube right now. So they've got what are called golf influencers, and basically they play golf, and you watch them play golf. But they banter, and they talk, and they joke, and those kinds of things. Well, a couple of ones I've come across, they also seek sponsorships so they can make some money for their YouTube channel. And one of the sponsorships is a betting app. And the amazing thing to me, not only can you put bets, bets are becoming legal. Gambling is legal in our society today in many situations, many circumstances. So you can actually wager on the outcome of games and who's going to win a golf tournament and just about anything you want to wager on. But now there's a new app out there. And it's basically day trading by betting. You know, day trading is kind of problematic because things go up and down during the day. And if you sell when they're up and you buy when they're down and you make trades all day long, then maybe you'll make some money. But there are an awful lot of people that say, oh, I can do this. And then they lose their shirt because of it, trying to day trade. Well, now you can day trade with sporting betting. You can do that. So you're in the middle of a game and Dallas has been losing, but all of a sudden Dallas scores a touchdown. And so before the thing spikes up, you set a bet that Dallas is going to win. And if they keep their comeback and they win, then you make money. And it goes up and down, depending on what's happening in the sporting event. And you can actually make instantaneous bets throughout a game if you want to, in order to try to make money, or what most people are going to do is lose their shirts as a result of that, because it makes absolutely no sense. It's foolishness. But to do evil is like sport. Oh, this is fun. I remember a man that I knew who was trying to justify playing the lottery. And I said, it's covetousness. And I explained to him that it's a zero-sum game. And the other things that we talk about to show how that gambling is not only sometimes illegal, but also considered a vice when it is not, but it's immoral as well, and they just ignore it. His excuse was he bought the lottery tickets for entertainment. He was just entertaining himself. And the proof is that he didn't scratch it off as soon as he got it. He went home and he put it on his dresser and waited till the next day to scratch it off. And because of that, it wasn't wrong for him to do it. Well, it's sport for a fool. And that's what evil is, sport to a fool. But a man of understanding, he has wisdom. And so there is that difference of doing evil. Sin is not dangerous. It's not that big of a thing. We're told in Proverbs 14, a wise man fears and departs from evil. But the fool rages and is confident. Sin doesn't scare me. Well, it ought to. The devil is a roaring lion walking about seeking whom he may devour. You need to resist him. You need to flee temptation, flee sexual immorality. All those things that we say with our sophistication, actually our foolishness, I can handle. Too often we're not able to. So we need to make sure we don't ignore the dangers of sin. There are two others I want to mention. The next one is pride. Arrogance. Someone who's just not willing to listen to wise counsel. That's foolishness. Characteristic of a fool. You think you know everything? You don't. I sure don't think I know everything. Let's consider God's Word. I've been preaching now since I was 16 years old. 63 years old now. I've been preaching for a long, long time. There's a lot that I don't know about God's divine will. It is so sublime. There is so much that I learn every time. I'm looking forward in the coming year to begin our study on Sunday mornings in the book of Hebrews because I know how much I'm going to learn. I'm going to enjoy getting in and digging in, and there are going to be nuggets that I had never thought of before in my readings and in my study that I'm going to learn. But a foolish individual, he's right in his own eyes, as Proverbs chapter 12 says. It's the person who heeds counsel, the advice of others, who is wise. There's a reason why we're given oversight in the church. There's a reason why that oversight consists not of one man, but a panel of men, an eldership, when it is the scriptural pattern that is followed in God's church. There's a reason why we are to look to the guidance of our parents when we are young, because they are wiser than we are. And I do not know how many times I've heard young people argue with their parents thinking that I know best, thinking that you just don't understand, thinking that if you were in my shoes, you would think differently. The problem is they don't understand is their parents were once right where they are right now, thinking the same thing about their parents, and finally got to the point to where they realized, whoops, mom and dad knew better. I should have been listening to mom and dad more often instead of being antagonistic toward them. And that's an important thing to consider. We were told in Ecclesiastes chapter 10 and verse 12, the words of a wise man's mouth, they're gracious. The lips of a fool swallow him up. Swallow him up. Again, all of us need to understand this. Young people, old alike, children, teenagers, adults, whatever the case may be. Do you want to be known as a foolish person? Then just go on and do what you want. And will you mind if you do that, that we maybe set aside and we say, you know, oh, that person's so foolish. They have no wisdom at all. They just don't understand how foolish they're acting, how foolish they're sounding, how foolish their actions are. And if they would just listen and just accept that some people know better than them, have been farther along in their lives, have gained more understanding, more discernment than maybe they have. But this fool, we're told in Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 13, the words of his mouth begin with foolishness, and the end of his talk is raving madness. Ah, there's so many who have been caught up in this. The fool multiplies words. You ever seen that person who has to get the last word in? It's a kind of an interesting thing in our culture that happens so often, because you have a discussion that's ongoing, and instead of listening, considering, applying as needed, instead what they're doing is immediately wanting to say what they want to say and not listen to you, but they want you to listen to them. So they're too busy talking to listen. And one of the aspects of that you see in such conversations is they always want the last word. They're never willing to stop with the other person making the point. They have to get their point in finally, as if I say the same thing for the 75th time, that maybe since I said it last, my way is the best way. It doesn't work that way, does it? So you've got a foolish person. His mouth, this is the word of the writer of Ecclesiastes, the wise man of Ecclesiastes, inspired by God. The words of his mouth begin with foolishness, but the end of his talk is raving madness. We need to be careful about that and understand that arrogance and pridefulness, none of us know what is best. God knows what is best, but none of us should go through our lives without asking for and receiving and accepting the wise counsel that another can share with us. It's an important part of being a child of God and being acceptable to Him. Then the final point I want to make, and this is one to consider again for us, and that is the fool does not prepare his soul for death. And again, the word fool is used in Luke chapter 12 when God said to that rich one, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? Nope, that's not how he started it, was it? Was it? He said, fool, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself but is not rich toward God. It's foolishness. Why do we call Matthew chapter 25 with regard to the parable that was there talking about judgment day, the wise and the foolish virgins? What's the difference between the wise and the foolish virgins? The wise virgins brought extra oil for their lamps. The foolish virgins did not. And when the Lord was delayed in coming, the wise virgins were able to retrim their lamps and to go into the feast when he finally showed up. The foolish virgins weren't there because they had to go buy more oil. They were not prepared. Wise, foolish. It's foolish not to prepare for that day when the Lord's coming. So how do you do that? Well, we understand this. It's not to discern the times. God has not revealed to us when the world's going to come to an end. He has not revealed the minute. He has not revealed the hour. He's not revealed the day. Now, there are individuals today that will say, well, we know that he's not revealed the hour or the minute or the day. We may even say that he hasn't revealed the month. But surely we can discern the times. And as a result of discerning the times, we can come up with some using the math of the Old Testament, using the prophecies, using the book of Revelation, go in, and using the machinations of our own minds, we could come up with some formula to say it's going to happen. 1898, Jehovah's Witnesses. 1914, Jehovah's Witnesses. Those are the two that come to my mind as far as dates, but there have been dates that have been given since 1914 until today where individuals said, they got it wrong, but I got it right. You had the... what's his name? Can't remember his name right offhand. But the big writer, evangelical writer in the 1980s, who wrote a book called The Countdown to Armageddon, the 1980s. He said by the end of the 1980s, Armageddon would come. And the great final battle would be coming in the 1980s. And it didn't happen. We could go day by day by day. God has not told us the minute. He hasn't told us the hour. He hasn't told us the day. He hasn't told us the month. He hasn't told us the year. He hasn't told us the century. He hasn't told us the millennia. We could go on and on and on to say that we don't know when it is that the Lord will come. Now, don't take it from that it's not going to happen anytime soon, because it could happen today. Today is the day you have for salvation. The Lord will come as a thief in the night. A thief in the night. You know, that's scary, isn't it? Why does the thief come in the night? So we don't see him. He comes in the dark. And in the cover of darkness and breaks into our home when no one is around. Everyone is either asleep and the neighborhood is not watching, and they break in to steal what they can steal. Maybe when he's not there. We don't know when it's going to happen, do we? We're told that it's going to happen when the Lord determines it's going to happen. The Lord is long-suffering toward us, not willing that any should perish, but all come to repentance. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night. And that tells us we should prepare. And we should prepare today. So as we draw our lesson to a close, noting those things, understand this. You don't want to be a fool. Just don't want to be foolish. We can act foolishly. Children act foolishly. All the kids were over at our house last night, and they were giggling and laughing and carousing and having the best time. And we could say they're being kind of foolish sometimes and playing and being silly. That's fine. But this is too serious. This is important. Our spiritual standing with God. And understand, when you make bad decisions, where your life is not lived for Christ, not only does it compound itself in your own destruction, but also in the sorrow that it brings to others, to those who love you as well. And so it is truly a danger to be a fool, and may we never, ever have those characteristics in our own lives. And so this is a word of warning to you. I appreciate your kind attention in these things. And keep in mind what is stated in Proverbs chapter 7, that one who begets a scoffer, he does so to his sorrow. The father of fool has no joy. We want to bring joy into the world, want to bring joy to others. We want the peace which passes understanding for ourselves, and we certainly want God to be happy. And with that, we offer that invitation, knowing that there's more joy in heaven over one person who needs to repent rather than the 99 who needs no repentance. There is anyone who is here who has a need to respond to the gospel, who has a need to make things right in your life, who needs us to pray for you. Let us rejoice. Take that step. Be wise and discerning and do what you need to do. Would you do that now while together we stand, while we sing the song Selected?